I would next like to introduce Elizabeth Martinez, who's a wonderful worker in this city. Please come up, Elizabeth. Elizabeth has among her many accomplishments, she will be addressing us about the early days of the United Nations when she was an employee right after the signing of the UN Charter. Thank you very much.
My goodness, didn't he date me? Oh, well. We can all say that here. I can't tell you how moved I am to be here today and also yesterday. I was just thinking that after, 40 years of social justice activism, oh boy, up and down, that if ever I should ever get discouraged, all I have to do is remember this weekend and think of all of you, because you have just given me life forever. Thank you. In the movement. I want to say a few things about the United Nations, because, there's two words that George Bush does not want to hear. It's United Nations. Ooh. I asked my daughter yesterday, well, what on earth should I say about this? It goes back a long way. She said, Mom, just tell them what you wrote in your diary when you were a teenager. She saw my diary and read it. You know how kids are. Yeah. And what I had written was, this was as a teenager in school, and the war was on. And I remember that one day they had an air raid drill. Air raid drill at school. Sirens went off like crazy, over and over again. And the kids were supposed to get home as fast as they could. So I ran half a mile with the sirens still going on. And I was scared to death, even though it was just a drill. But I remember thinking at the time, nobody anywhere in this world should have to live through that. But it's just the noise of those sirens and the possibility of death and everything made me think, okay, got to do something about it. Which was the result of that was that when I got out of college, I said, okay, got to work for the United Nations, got to bring about world peace. A small ambition, when you have a little BA. why not? Me alone. So I did, in fact, get a job at the UN when it was still at a place called Lake Success, New York, before it moved into New York City. Very little place, okay. The UN at that time, well, nobody's going to remember, but it had been formed here in San Francisco, April 1945, when 51 nations came together and there was a charter drafted and, people had signed it. It said its main goal was to maintain international peace and security, and also another goal, to advance self-determination of all peoples. So I started working at the United Nations in a secretariat. And they assigned me to a department that no longer exists, which was the Department of Trusteeship and Non-Self-Governing Territories, former colonies after World War II. And guess what my first job was? My first job was to work in a department that was handling the partition of Palestine. 1948, and if you know anything about that and the struggle of Palestinian people, you know that 1948 United Nations decision is something they do not remember happily. So I thought at the time, this is kind of a funny thing to do, huh? partition Palestine, and Israel had declared itself a state. There was a war, and so it was a very hard time. But I thought, maybe they got to do it, because I remembered very well the Holocaust, reading about it, and the horrors and that so many Jewish people had experienced. I thought, well, I guess they have to have a place to go. But I still thought, something, why did they have to partition Palestine? Well, that was the beginning of my other education in power politics and in how some people treated the UN. But I was still very glad to be there. And I start looking back today, I was thinking about, okay, people in this country have been taught to hold the UN in contempt. It never can do anything, or gets in our way. I mean, the United States has a record of refusing to pay dues to United Nations more than anybody else, as if we couldn't afford it. So that is the climate, and I'm sure all of you here have heard about it, know it, feel it, perhaps. However, there's many things that, in fact, it has done or set in motion, and they're relevant, I think, today to look back at them. One of the things was the vote to put pressure on South Africa, was at that time held a mandate over Namibia, then called Southwest Africa. And there were many, many, many actions taken by countries all over the world to make South Africa recognize its obligations and get out and let the United Nations be the administrator until independence of Southwest Africa. So trade was banned. There was boycotts on shipment of arms to South Africa and so forth. It took some more years. 1966, the International Court of Justice, which is a real thing, said that ended the mandate over Namibia, Southwest Africa. Naturally, as you know, it took many more years. But the point I'm making here is that South Africa, apartheid, racism, everything was exposed to the world in a way that was the first step, I think, that led to many other actions, including, for example, the apartheid, anti-apartheid actions right here and in many other cities. I'm saying it was an educational force, and many, many countries stood up against South Africa and its actions. That educational factor, I think, is very, very important. Also, another example is when the United Nations a committee officially declared Puerto Rico was a colony of the United States. Whoa. But the U.S. government hasn't liked it since. But that just saying that and making it official was an enormous boost to the Puerto Rican independence movement. Because when the United Nations said that and all those countries said that, it had some meaning to them. And there were other things that people don't know about. UNESCO, for example, which spent millions of dollars in enormous effort bringing education and science and so forth to many countries. The United Nations Commission on for Refugees spent $4 billion helping people resettle. Anyway, there's a lot of things that we don't hear about that I think speak to the future. And it's not the future that the Bush administration wants, but it's a future, I think, that people here want and that other people around the world want. When 30 million people demonstrated all over the world last February against the war on Iraq, even the New York Times said, there's another superpower out there, and it's people power. Okay, so I think that looking at the United Nations as an agency that we have to have somehow, and who expected it to work in 50 years? With all those countries arguing with each other? No way, you know? And to put it down because it hasn't brought about world peace in 55 years, well, that seems a little bit demanding, no? But we have to all put... But what I think is important about it is the fact that it does represent so much of world opinion, and it is an agency, it is a mechanism, it is a model with which people can get together and talk things through. And there is no other model. There is no other model. And such models are despised by the governments of this country. So when I say, let's look at the United Nations, let's uphold the idea that it's the United Nations who should be functioning now with other countries in Iraq, and not this endless occupation by one country who decided it could go to war on people at will. The other thing I want to say is part of this people power thing. You probably remember when the U.S. tried to push through the U.N. A vote to support going to war. Well, you know, it got stuck. It didn't work. 6 months went by. Even Mexico held out against voting with the U.S., and that's no small thing, folks. Okay. The push towards war was slowed down for that time, and it didn't end the push, but it spoke to the fact that there is a people power out there, that there are alternatives, and I think that we can all join behind the idea that we need every possible method and tool that we can find to bring about the peace that the Veterans for Peace are working for, and all of us, I hope. Thank you so much.